podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering a master's in clinical psychology with an MFT evening format. Priority deadline to apply for September classes is July 8th. GSEP.pepperdine.edu.
Podcast supported by Spectrum News One. Hosts Alex Cohen and Amrit Singh provide a deeper look at the issues affecting Southern Californians and their communities on Inside the Issues, weeknights at 8 on Spectrum News One on Channel One, exclusively on Spectrum.
From 89.3 KPCC, this is Take Two. I'm Amy Martinez, a very pride-filled Friday to you wherever you may be. All right, wasting no time, we're going to jump right into it with State of Affairs. That's our weekly peek at politics in the Golden State. And this week, a big new poll from the Public Policy Institute shows us what's really on the minds of California voters. Meanwhile, a long list of Democrats are lining up to take on Central Valley Republican Devin Nunes. We'll get into those stories and more with Jack Pitney. He's a Roy P. Crockett Professor of Politics at Claremont McKenna College. Good to see you, Jack.
Good afternoon.
Also with us, Carla Marinucci, Senior Editor for Politico's California Playbook. Welcome to you as well, Carla.
Hey, great to be with you.
All right, let's start with those numbers out of the PPIC earlier this week. And they took the temperature of likely voters from both sides of the aisle. So we're going to start with the Democrats, who seem to be divided over a key question. Carla, what is that key question?
Well, you know, according to that PPIC poll, there's this real age gap split on one issue, and that is it more important to defeat President Trump in 2020 or to nominate a candidate who best reflects your political views? The older voters, it's electability, it's defeat Trump. And with younger voters, it's their views. You know, when you're talking about voters age 18 to 44, half of them want a candidate that reflects their views. The older voters say no. The majority say, look, importance is to defeat Trump. I thought that was kind of interesting. There's also a real split, by the way, on impeachment. 49% of Californians say it's time to move on impeachment proceedings. 45% say no. And that splits right on party lines. Overwhelming number of Democrats, two-thirds, want to move an impeachment. Only 9% of Republicans,
Clearly, a bit of a generational split here, Jack. You're someone that works with young people a lot, and I want to get your take on that question about who to support, because young people always seem to be a little bit more ideological. So why do you think that is, Jack?
Young people have dreams. Old people have bad memories. You get to a certain age and you remember how grand schemes, great ideas, both in politics and life, often just don't quite work out. Take the case of impeachment. Younger people, my students, for instance, have no memory of the Clinton impeachment. Older people, older Democrats, people like Nancy Pelosi, they remember what happened with the Clinton impeachment, and that backfired on the Republicans. And so that's an example of how age tends to make one a bit more cautious.
I always think, Jack and Carla, that when you don't own anything, you can be as idealistic as possible. But when you own things and they own you, all of a sudden, you start to think about things differently. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Jack, being a few generations removed as you are, who tends to get elected?
You know, it really depends on the year. In some years, the advantage goes to the more ideological candidate. Sometimes it goes to the more moderate or practical candidate. I just finished writing a book on the 1988 election, so a couple of examples from that. 1980, Ronald Reagan, the more ideological candidate, runs for the Republican nomination, defeats the more moderate or practical candidate, George H.W. Bush. 8 years later, Bush is the vice president. He gets the nomination over the more ideological candidate, Jack Kemp. So it really depends on the year. It depends on which faction of the party is dominant at the time.
Carla, another tidbit from that PPIC poll. About 82% of California Republicans say they'll definitely or probably vote to reelect Donald Trump as their president. My conservative uncle in Koreatown is among those 82%. He says the only thing that will stop him from voting for President Trump is if he's not alive to do it. That's how hardcore he is. So wondering, Carla, is it safe to say that despite all that's happened since 2016, all the investigations, all the reports, support for Trump has not really wavered among Republicans, or is maybe something else at work?
Yeah, you know, and despite that huge blue wave that wiped out a bunch of Republicans in Southern California in 2018, they are standing by their man. That's the way to put it. Among Republicans in California, there is still robust support for President Trump. 84% of Republicans approve of how he is doing his job as president. And you compare that to independents, only 43%. And Democrats, 8%. I mean, hardly any. So Republicans are united in overwhelmingly wanting to see him reelected. And Democrats in Indies are trying to figure out the best way to usher him out of the Oval Office. We should say that Trump's overall approval ratings in California are 34%. But hey, the state legislature isn't much better at 39%. Yeah. And Trump is actually higher than Congress at 30%. So among Republicans, he's still holding strong.
My uncle says he's considering mailing in his vote to cover any time between the time he mails it to the election,
yes,
just in case.
I mean, some relatives like this.
Yeah, he's 70 years old, so he's covering that time. Now, Carla, moving on. Late last month, President Trump tweeted that the U.S. will impose tariffs on Mexico if they don't make a greater effort to stop illegal immigration. Those could kick in as early as Monday. It's a move that Republicans here in California do not welcome, but yet no one is lining up to fight him on it. Has anyone at all, Carla, spoken up on this?
Well, you know, this has been the president's call for tariffs on goods from Mexico beginning Monday blindsided Republicans. It has really put them between a rock and a hard place, especially in California. Mexico is our largest trading partner. And remember that the Republican Party traditionally has stood up for free trade and against tariffs and against taxes, which a lot of people are calling, the Democrats are calling this Trump taxes. But GOP leader Kevin McCarthy in the last week has really stood by President Trump steadfastly. He's kind of tried to have it both ways, saying, well, he wants an agreement that protects the border and doesn't have tariffs. A lot of other Republicans are sort of in that same, you know, venue. Ken Calvert, Doug LaMalfa, both saying that they've heard from ag interests and business interests that are concerned, and they hope they can, quote unquote, work it out by Monday. But that is a big ask. It looks right now, as President Trump just said, maybe that will happen, as the top of the news just indicated. And they got to all be crossing their fingers that that's true.
Now, the House could move to block the tariffs, but to override the veto, 50 Republicans would have to side with Democrats. And in California, only 7 Republican lawmakers remain after 2018. Jack, why do you think they've been so reluctant to voice opposition?
Fear. They're afraid of Trump. They're afraid of Republican voters in primaries. Republican voters at one time used to be very free trade in line with Ronald Reagan. But now that Trump is pro-tariff, they're pro-tariff, too. And a Republican member of Congress would court opposition and probably get a serious primary challenge if he or she openly oppose the president on this issue.
Yeah, Republicans that have tried to oppose him on any issue, they get his ire via tweets.
That's right. And once the president targets you in a tweet, you're going to hear from lot of his Twitter followers, and that's an unpleasant experience.
Yeah. Now, okay, Carla, moving on to Central Valley's Devin Nunes. We haven't talked about him in a while. The congressman shelled out over $11 million to keep his seat back in 2018. He now faces a lot of challengers. First off, Nunes has had a contentious past a few years in his district, everything from a digital cow to a spat with a local newspaper.
That's right.
Who is lining up, Carla, to challenge him, and what have they said? And are they the dairy variety, the challengers?
No, these are the real variety. I mean, Devin Nunes has been a lightning rod as the member of, as the ranking House Intelligence Committee member. He was nearly knocked off in the midterm, of course. And then now the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has already targeted him for the 2020 cycle. So a couple of folks have filed. But this week what got our attention was a serious challenger who emerged, which is Fresno businessman Phil Arbalo. He's Latino. He's the son of a single mom. He's the father of two. And he already has the backing of Andrew Janz, who's that Fresno prosecutor who came within 5 points of defeating Nunes last time around. And, you know, Arbalo, being Mexican-American, this is the 22nd congressional district in the Central Valley. That's a district with 46% Latinos. That could be significant. He's already seizing on the issue of the tariffs, and that what he's calling the Trump tax and how it's slamming, you know, Central Valley farmers and consumers. So this is going to be one to watch as you go forward to 2020.
Jack, how good are the chances for a Democrat hoping to challenge him in 2020? There was a time where I would have never thought that Orange County here in our area here would ever be not completely Republican, but that's what it is now.
It's possible. On the one hand, it's a Republican district. He's an incumbent, and he's going to be able to raise money. But as Carla pointed out, in 2018, his challenger held him to less than 53% of the vote, which is a very, very weak showing for an entrenched incumbent. Democrats all over the United States are going to be putting money into this. As Carla pointed out, his challenger's credible. And put that combination together, if Republicans don't make a strong effort to get their vote out in California, which is likely given that they're going to write it off to whoever the Democratic nominee is, the Democrats have a chance at this.
Jack Pitney is the Roy P. Crockett Professor of Politics at Claremont McKenna College. Carla Marinucci, Senior Editor for Politico's California Playbook. Jack, Carla, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Pepperdine's Graduate School of Education and Psychology, offering a doctorate of education in organizational leadership, developing graduates with the knowledge and ability to transform organizations for optimal success and growth. An online hybrid tailored for working professionals with attendance only twice per term in West LA. Attend an information session to learn more. Classes start September. Apply by July 8th for a $1,000 scholarship at gsep.pepperdine.edu.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Amy Martinez, and we have some breaking news from the world of sports sponsorship. You're going to hear a new name coming out of the LA Memorial Coliseum starting in August. It'll be known as United Airlines Field at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. Now, that mouthful is a bit of a compromise after United Airlines last year paid USC $69 million for the naming rights to the stadium. Now, the company originally was going to dub it United Airlines Memorial Coliseum, but veterans groups launched a protest. They said the venue was a tribute to World War I veterans and it should not have a corporate sponsor. Both USC and United Airlines issued statements today announcing the new deal. In that compromise, the whole complex will still be called the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. But when the Trojans or Rams hit the field in August, you'll hear announcers say they're taking United Airlines Field instead. All right, keeping with veterans for a moment, LA County released the results of its annual homeless count Tuesday. The outcome, well, bleak. Overall, the number of Angelenos sleeping on the streets or in temporary shelters increased a whopping 12%, a major disappointment given the ongoing efforts to address the issue. But one group had slightly better results, homeless military veterans. KPCC veterans and military reporter Libby Dankman is here to talk all about it. Hello, Libby.
Hey, A.
All right, so what did the numbers show us?
Right. Let me set the stage first. Last year, the number of homeless veterans in Los Angeles County was over 3,800. Over the past year, the county housed about 2,800 veterans, which is a big number. But meanwhile, nearly that many fell into homelessness, many of them for the first time. So according to the count this year, the number is still over 3,800. In fact, there were just 12 fewer veterans on the street in 2019. Seriously, A, just 12. It was a very slim improvement. But compared to the rest of the homeless population rising across the county, this is a bright spot.
At the risk of sounding like hating on the numbers, Libby, 12 doesn't sound like it made much of a difference.
I know. It's really tough to find a silver lining here in all the homeless count. And we're just not talking a huge win with veterans. But the numbers did buck the trend of big increases for the civilian groups across the county. And this is the second year in a row of gains for vets. Last year, we saw an 18% dip in veteran homelessness. And this year, there was also a 14% drop in chronically homeless veterans on the streets, many with addiction and mental health issues, which shows progress reaching the toughest to house veterans. Big picture, homeless veterans holding steady this year is evidence that investments in housing and services can make a big difference for vulnerable populations.
All right, so we take the wins as they come then. then. But there are some communities, though, that have ended veteran homelessness, right?
It's true. Nationwide, there's been a good deal of progress on housing veterans in the last decade. The Obama administration and then VA Secretary Bob McDonald made ending veteran homelessness a major goal and recruited local leaders like L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti to sign up for the effort. Mayor Garcetti is a veteran himself. Some smaller states and cities like Riverside have reported functional zero for homeless veterans. Basically, they have solved the problem. HUD says the population of vets on the streets nationwide has dropped by 48% since 2009. In LA, it's dropped about 40%, but we still have by far the largest number in the country. And local leaders have walked back pledges to end Los Angeles veteran homelessness entirely. Garcetti said that there were just simply too many former service members falling into homelessness.
And I'm guessing this comes down to housing and jobs.
Yes, that's what we saw in the last year. Advocates say it's the housing crisis and economic factors that are pushing more veterans over the brink.
And then I guess a question a lot would have, Libby, is why did veteran numbers do better than overall homelessness?
I spoke to a number of people in the nonprofit space and folks working on this problem for government agencies, and they said several things helped. First thing, closer coordination between the Department of Veterans Affairs, LASA, the county's Department of Mental Health, and other agencies that will connect vets to supportive services that are available to them. Making sure that when those groups connect with a homeless person, they're asking about veteran status. Are you a veteran? And connecting military veterans with the VA for benefits like a pension or healthcare services that might be available. Number two, more outreach, including street teams from the VA and nonprofit service providers, and knowledgeable folks that are going out to speak with veterans, speaking language that they understand, often folks who have combat experience themselves who can build trust. That's the case with Kevin Kinsey, a veteran and outreach coordinator for the nonprofit U.S. Vets that provides housing and services to hundreds of vets in L.A. I went along on an outreach mission on Skid Row recently. As you'll hear, he stopped nearly everyone we passed to ask their veteran status.
Any veterans? Veterans? You're a veteran, sir? Okay. The VA and the nation, I would say, has made a concerted effort to outreach and help homeless veterans. The government has thrown money at the situation. We've personally hired more vet-friendly people, outreach people, to come out here and try to engage with veterans and see what they need and how to better help them. And I know the VA has also. They've been in the same places that some of these guys have been in as far as combat stuff, and they're able to communicate with them.
Wow. Now, what about the actual housing that's available to veterans?
Yeah, that's really the biggest difference between the vet and civilian homeless populations. There's a lot of federal funding dedicated specifically to temporary and permanent housing solutions for vets. Back in October, the Department of Veterans Affairs announced a boost for rental vouchers for chronically homeless veterans in Los Angeles. Those are called HUD-VASH vouchers. They include rental assistance from HUD, similar to Section 8, and supportive services from the VA. And unlike Section 8, local communities are getting more HUD-VASH vouchers, and there aren't long waiting lists. 700 vouchers were added to the LA area. That totals about 7,000 now in Southern California. Of course, these vouchers are no guarantee of finding a place to live. Everyone who has been looking for an apartment lately will tell you it's a tough haul out there, and landlords don't have to accept vouchers. And veterans will report a hard time sometimes when they walk into a place. The landlord doesn't want to play ball.
Well, how about the temporary options? We've been hearing a lot about bridge housing facilities in LA lately.
Yeah, so the VA also funds beds in transitional housing facilities through its grant and per diem program. For example, the organization U.S. Vets has over 600 beds with different care models in Inglewood. There's also short-term financial assistance from the VA for low-income veteran families. And all these programs are unique to military veterans. There's also a 100-bed bridge housing facility slated for the West LA VA grounds in Brentwood, and that's part of Mayor Garcetti's citywide bridge housing initiative. But that construction has slowed down because contractors hit a pipe full of asbestos last year.
So that had to mean cleanup.
Yeah, it's really a bummer. But the site should be handed over to the city soon. The VA and Councilmember Mike Bonin's office said the temporary beds, which were first supposed to open in spring of 2019, so we're past that, they should now open in the late summer or early October.
Well, it's good that veterans' homelessness is holding steady, but it would be great, I mean, absolutely great, to see those numbers go down soon. So what's next in this battle?
Well, the project that could take the largest bite out of the remaining veteran homeless population is still in the planning stages on the West LAVA campus. At least 1,200 units of permanent supportive housing are included in the master plan to overhaul that 388-acre federal facility. I've reported on this for you before, A. Before moving forward, though, that project is pending its final environmental review. Construction and renovation will, of course, take some time. The next round of permanent supportive housing units on that VA campus isn't expected to open until the beginning of 2021.
That's Libby Denkman, KPCC Veterans and Military Reporter, talking to us about the homeless vets and the ongoing efforts to house them. Libby, thanks a lot.
Thanks, A.
South Los Angeles is about to get some major road upgrades, including protected bike lanes and painted curb extensions that allow pedestrians to cross the road more safely. The upgrades are slated to take place along a six-mile stretch of Avalon Boulevard between Jefferson Boulevard and 120th Street. All the roadway changes were decided in partnership with community residents. Last night marked the culmination of a very long collaboration. Officials from the L.A. Department of Transportation had spent 35 straight days meeting with more than 12,000 neighborhood residents. Now, the department has come under fire in recent years for taking away lanes of traffic for cars and then doing it without a lot of community support. So, lesson learned. Now it's getting input in advance. The main concerns for people in South L.A., residents say traffic is just going too fast and they need more places to safely cross the street. Avalon Boulevard has been one of L.A.'s most dangerous streets for pedestrians and cyclists. In 2017, Avalon got its first upgrade, which was more visible crosswalks and safer signal lights that let people start walking across a lighted intersection before cars get the green light. The newest round of safety upgrades, including new bike lanes, should go in by the end of the year. And LADOT says at that point, it'll be doing even more community outreach to make sure every resident knows about all the changes.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Spectrum News One, where talk meets action, where politicians meet constituents, where issues meet understanding. Join hosts Alex Cohn and Amrit Singh for Inside the Issues on Spectrum News One, a nightly political show that takes you inside the issues affecting you, your family, and your community. Inside the Issues, weeknights at 8 on Spectrum News One on Channel One, exclusively on Spectrum.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. Amy Martinez. It's still early, but polls suggest the three leading Democratic presidential candidates in California heading into the first debates later this month are, drumroll please, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and Kamala Harris. Yet when Capital Public Radio's Ben Adler sat down with a small group of undecided California Democrats a few days ago, none of those big names came up. Yesterday, we heard the first part of their chat. Today, in part two, Ben asked them about those three big-name frontrunners.
It was clear at last weekend's California Democratic Party convention in San Francisco that Senator Kamala Harris can't take her home state for granted. Here's Mimi Falcone, a 56-year-old small business owner from Irvine.
I really was excited about Kamala. When she spoke to the general session, I was not as impressed, which really surprised me. In my opinion, I don't think she has it to carry it nationally.
And here's Joe Griego, a 54-year-old from rural eastern Inyo County. He's the chief technology officer for a neighboring county's Office of Education.
She did not inspire the passion or the emotion that I had hoped for.
Why do you think that is?
That's a great question. I heard Cory Booker speak, and it was more inspiring. He does a wonderful job of storytelling to think that's the America that we could be. And I didn't hear that from Kamala Harris, unfortunately.
27-year-old Keen Chukwuneta of Richmond, an organizer for a local healthcare union, hinted at deeper concerns.
Kamala Harris, her record as the district attorney here in San Francisco and how she, her office related to working people kind of freaks me out a little bit, and I'll kind of just leave it at that.
And even our roundtable guest who has a warmer opinion of Harris likes other candidates more. This is 55-year-old Rosemary Wren of San Luis Obispo County, a part-time college lecturer and doctorate student.
I have a lot of respect for Kamala Harris. I find her to be a strong leader, and I can picture her leading this country. She's not my first choice of candidate.
Biden campaigned in Ohio over the weekend instead of attending the convention. And perhaps that's no surprise, because the party's progressive activists aren't exactly his base. Keen Chukwuneta has some real problems with the former vice president.
I feel like he discounts a lot of our pain and the issues that matter to us in ways that I think are extremely disrespectful. Trying to say things like, oh, well, you know, millennials, you know, they complain about this, they complain about that.
And Rosemary Wren says she has a lot of admiration for Biden, but called his missing the convention a grave mistake.
I was extremely disappointed that he chose not to be here this weekend.
You think he would have been booed if he had been here?
That's possible, but we saw two candidates up there who had the fortitude to come up and say what they believed in, and they did get booed, but they were here.
As for Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, Mimi Falcone thinks he's too polarizing to attract independents and Republicans upset with the president.
We have to get them to vote Democrat. And we do that by finding commonality. And maybe Bernie has that commonality. I'm not so sure.
And even a past Sanders voter, Keen Chukwuneta, isn't sold on him this time around.
He put a lot of these issues on the map and he kind of broke through.
But you're not necessarily looking to vote for him?
No, because I also think Senator Warren might actually be doing a better job of fleshing out what some of these policy ideas look like.
So who might our undecided Democrats vote for in California's March primary? Well, all four praised Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Two mentioned Sanders, and the other two named New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. But all of them said they'd vote for any Democrat against President Trump, even if it's Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden. I'm Ben Adler.
All right, if you're still undecided about what to do this weekend, we've got ideas to help you out.
Hi, I'm Christine Ziemba from LAist.
And I'm KPCC's Leo Durant. It's set to be a warm weekend, so break out the sunglasses for our bright ideas on what to do.
Now, this isn't necessarily bright, but Edgar Allan Poe's tragic life and death are explored in a new immersive theater production by the Downtown Repertory Theater Company. It's called The Assassination of Edgar Allan Poe, and it begins its run tonight. It takes place in and around the Victorian mansions of the Heritage Square Museum in Montecito Heights. It's a sort of choose-your-own-adventure as you pick the characters and the storylines you want to follow. You'll be walking around, so comfortable shoes are recommended. And when you go this opening weekend, tickets are only $25. The show runs through August 17th.
Now, instead of fluttering around a theater set piece, you can also fly with some butterflies. Starting today, head to Claremont for Butterflies and Brews. It's an event every Friday in June at the Rancho Santa Ana Botanic Garden. The garden hosts a happy hour where you'll get to tour the Butterfly Pavilion, enjoy some live music, hang out on the grounds, and just relax after a long week. It's $15 or $10 for garden members, and that comes with one craft brew. Plus, you'll be able to get more drinks and food, too, on site.
Also this weekend, find out how many people you can safely squeeze into your car, because tonight at 8, the Rhodium Open Air Market in Torrance begins its weekly drive-in movie series with Back to the Future. Watch the 1985 film with Michael J. Fox as a time-traveling high school student from the comfort of your car, retro style. Food truck fare and movie concessions will be available for purchase. The gates open at 6:30 p.m. And tickets are $20 per car. And if you type in the promo code LAIST, at checkout, you'll get 10% off.
Finally, it is Pride Weekend in LA. In addition to the ticketed festival in West Hollywood, there will be a free block party attached to it this time on Santa Monica Boulevard. But there's more going on than just in WeHo. Over in Boyle Heights, check out Brown and Out Festival 5. This is a theater festival that starts today and runs throughout the month, presented by Casa 0101 Theater. It's to celebrate LGBTQ Latinx culture, and each night will feature 11 original short plays with titles like Are You Gay or Latino? And Mija. Going is a great way to see and support local queer artists, and the show runs every weekend up until early July, and tickets start at $18. Now, there's so much more than just that. Check out our full list of events on laist.com. That is laist.com.
I'm Christine Ziemba from LAist.
And I'm KPCC's Leo Duran.
Have a good weekend, all.
Now, as you just heard in Weekend Preview, LA Pride comes to West Hollywood this weekend. Tens of thousands are expected to show. And if you plan to take part in the festivities, you might also be happy to know that your favorite street foods might be there, too. Earlier this week, the West Hollywood City Council voted to temporarily approve sidewalk vendors just in time for Pride. Now, it was a reluctant move on the part of the council, but it agreed because lifting the ban will allow the city to start regulating those vendors, and regulate they will. Among the many restrictions, carts will not be allowed to be within a block of the parade route along Santa Monica Boulevard, and they'll need a license from the county health department. Vendors who do not comply will face fines, so hey, get out there, have fun, and maybe a nice elote along the way.